Hey, this is Nicole DeBoer, a.k.a. Esri Dax, and you're listening to The Shuttle Pod.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to The Shuttle Pod podcast. This is a very special supplemental edition of the podcast. All of us are just back from STLV, Star Trek Las Vegas, the big annual convention held every year at the Rio Hotel in Las Vegas. A lot of stuff happened. It was a crazy 5 days. And we're back. And we wanted to sort of debrief, talk about what we learned, what we liked, what we didn't like, and what's up for next year. So, as always, I am your host, Kayla Iacovino, and I am joined by Brian Drew.
Hello, everybody.
And Matt Wright.
Hey, everybody.
So, all right, guys, all three of us were at the convention this year. Brian and I have been a number of times. I think we figured out that this was my 10th convention since Star Trek convention for the Las Vegas ones. And Matt, this was your first convention.
Yes. Been meaning to go for forever. Just never worked out. Finally went. It was really cool. Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to sort of hear your perspective as a first-time STLV goer.
Yeah.
In addition to me and Brian's sort of more jaded views. So I think, why don't we start out with sort of talking about, you know, if someone is asking you, hey, I didn't go to STLV, you know, just give me the bullet points, give me the highlights. What are the takeaways in terms of the news that actually came out of STLV? Because there were a couple of newsy things, and a lot of the same old stuff that we get, you know, every year. But what do you guys think were the biggest news items that you wouldn't want to leave STLV without having seen?
Well, obviously there were the Discovery panels, I guess, were the headline items of this convention.
Mm-hmm.
And there were, what, four of them?
Yep.
Yeah, so back to back.
Yeah, and we can get into that later about how crazy that was. There were four panels. There was a writer's panel, which had Akiva Goldsman, who's the executive producer of the show, Ted Sullivan, who's a writer on the show, and also Kirsten Baer, who's a writer and quote-unquote canon expert for the show. So we had that panel, and that was quickly followed, literally right after, by the actors panel, which had several, like four or five of the actors that were not in San Diego.
Right. So we had Mary Chifo and Kenneth Mitchell, who are two of our new Klingons.
Right.
And then we also had Sam Bartholomeus and Wilson Cruz, who are two other sort of non-main cast characters. Bartholomeus plays Ensign Connor, and Wilson Cruz plays the ship's doctor, who is in a relationship with Lieutenant Stamets, Anthony Rapp's character.
Right. And that was always fun, hearing what the actors have to say about, you know.
Yeah, and they had a lot of really good stuff to say about their experience on Discovery and, you know, learning Star Trek, sort of, and making it kind of a dream come true for at least a couple of them, who are, like, big Trekkies. They were pretty into it. Or recently Trekkies, yep. Actually, as we learned that Mary Chifo is sort of a recent Trekkie, but really loves it all and is really into it now.
Yeah, she's definitely into it. She stayed the whole week at the convention because she was so interested in it.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, that was cool.
And it's hard to miss Mary at the con.
Yes.
You could see her coming a mile away. Yeah. Mary's very tall.
Yes, like most Klingon actors and actresses, she's very tall. And so, is Kenneth Mitchell. They're very tall.
Right. Yeah, it's funny because you see them. There's a picture on our website of the two of them from the interview that we did with them. And, you know, you wouldn't know that both of them are, like, you know, over 6 feet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they're both taller than me, and I'm close to 6'1". I think they're both at least 6'4", I would say.
Wow.
Yeah, they were tall.
Yep.
And very nice people. Like, we chatted with them just
yes.
a little bit.
Yes, oh, earlier. Extremely nice.
Yeah.
Mary's very sweet. And then we had a Klingon panel, right?
The designers
panel.
Where they
talked about...
Yeah.
Designers panel, which mostly emphasized on the Klingons,
right.
I would say.
So that was Neville Page and Glenn Hetrick.
Yeah, and Glenn Hetrick, yeah.
Who are, you know,
right.
kind of are famous from the sci-fi Face-Off show. Very talented guys.
Yeah, they went into great detail about their mindset behind costume decisions and basic, like, Klingon physiology and the rationale for what they decided to do. And
yep,
it was a pretty impressive panel. Anybody who thinks that they might be, this production might be winging its way through, trying to figure things out as they go, would be incorrect. These guys are thinking out things to a crazy degree.
Right. So to the level of deciding that Neville Page said that he really needs to design sort of from the bottom up, or in this case, like, since we're talking about living beings, like from the skeleton up, and just, yep, that's just his process. Like, he needs to know, he was saying he needed to know why Klingons had ridges and what, you know, why were they the way they were. And so he actually had a really cool photo of his idea, you know, of his rendering of a Klingon skull. And it was very impressive that they thought very, very, you know, in depth about, he was brought in very early and talked with Bran Fuller at length about the new look of the Klingons and that they should have sensory receptors, which is why we can see kind of small little, kind of indentations, even on the outside, you know, on their skin, along their, mm-hmm, along their ridges, and that they would have sort of extra sensory things, not unlike sort of pythons or, you know, snakes, etc. Because they're supposed to be, you know, top predators, right? Klingons are supposed to be ultimate hunting, an ultimate hunting, you know, kind of race. So then they would probably have these sort of fifth, sixth senses, whatever you want to call it. Like,
right, right.
Right. And then we also learned, for people who are really upset about them being bald, actually, that's a very early mandate from Bryan Fuller. So there you go. Almost from the get-go, they wanted a very different look. This wasn't just on accident or they thought it was neat. Like, there was a lot of thought into it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was interesting that both the panels we are just talking about, the designers panel and the actors panel, in both of those, I think it was nice to learn a lot about the Klingons. And I think there maybe isn't a specific piece of news that stands out in any of those. It's just kind of the whole thing.
Right.
A lot more details that we got, like some that you guys just touched on. And others, that something I really enjoyed from the actors panel is hearing them talk about the Klingon language and how it's being translated and translated, you know, into Klingon and then back into English so that the actors can understand, you know, obviously what they're saying, but the fact that they're, mm-hmm, actually reading these things in Klingon with someone helping them make the pronunciations correctly and learning how to, you know, where those words sit in your mouth and everything. Just like with the design, I think there's a similar amount of attention to detail being played to the language of the Klingons. And, you know, so hopefully that's all going to go into some kind of world building aspect that we're going to see in Discovery. You know, it's going to feel, hopefully it's going to feel like, you know, a really big sci-fi universe. Like, I feel like Trek has always felt that way to me. So hopefully this will help, mm-hmm,
yeah,
keep that going.
Yeah, I think this is just taking it to another level because things like the Klingon language are well established now. Lots of people actually speak it in real life. So, which is really kind of impressive, right? So yeah, this is really cool. They're really trying to get certain details real, like a real lived, you know, universe. So impressive.
Yeah, it was my favorite panel of the day.
Mm-hmm.
The design panel?
Yeah, it was super cool.
Yeah, I loved learning about that process. It's also really cool to learn because, like, I know who sort of Glenn Hetrick is just from seeing Face Off and stuff, but he didn't strike me as someone who would be a Trekkie just because he kind of looks like a biker dude, which I hate to say, mm-hmm, that I judged a book by the cover, but I totally did. He seems like he's a guy who'd be into, like, horror movies, which, of course, he is. That's one of his wheelhouses as well. But like, it turns out, though, that he's like this massive Trekkie and was, you know, talking about it at the convention and, you know, and he was hanging out later that day at the convention and chatting with people about it. And so it was cool because he was saying at one point that, you know, every time, like, you have all these nitpicks and concerns. He's like, and don't, like, believe me, like, it's going through my mind too. I'm thinking about, like, what you guys are thinking about as fans. I'm thinking about it as a designer. I'm thinking about it as a, you know, as like a fan. So it was actually really nice to hear because it is such a weird kind of new departure. The Klingons are very different looking, but it was nice to hear that there was a lot of thought and there was a lot of, you know, there was kind of a fanboy aspect in a good way that, like, hey, there's somebody who really, like, cared to try to take to evolve this look.
Well, and I think the word evolve is really key there. Like, yeah, I agree that the Klingons are definitely pretty different than what we've seen before, but at the same time, there's no mistaking what they're supposed to be. You know, if someone showed you a picture of one of the new Klingons and said, guess which alien race this is, there's no doubt that they're Klingons in my mind.
Right. You wouldn't be like, oh, that's a Romulan.
Oh, totally.
Right. Or some new species. Like, it's very obviously, they're very obviously Klingons. So those, the hallmarks of what Klingons look like are there.
Are there.
Yep.
Yeah. And in fact, they even talked about the whole bald thing. And I think it was Neville Page says, well, yeah, you know, just imagine that you shaved, you know, one of the old, like, you know, a Klingon from the TNG era. In mm-hmm. theory, like, hey, if you shaved him, like, you would see, because of course they never made this makeup detail underneath their head, right? But in theory, hey, if you shave one of them, this could be what they look like. We don't know exactly, but here, mm-hmm. like, this is our positing of that. Like, hey, mm-hmm. this is what they look like, and their ridges go all the way back, you know, and whatnot. And
right.
So it's cool. Like, you know, you have to adjust to it, and you have to kind of be okay with letting go a little bit. This is a fairly new kind of dramatic design, but there's a lot of thought. So
right, and this was a mandate from Brian Fuller.
Yep,
to do this redesign.
And so people who kind of are mad or whatever and think Fuller's original vision would be better or something, no, actually this is part of Fuller's vision. Neville Page mm-hmm. was brought in very early to work with him directly. So
yeah, and can I say that Neville was a really good sport. He was there most of the weekend. He posed with fans. He answered questions, and he was super cool. I don't know if Glenn was there the whole weekend, but Neville was there the better part of the weekend.
Yeah, kudos to him. He was even interacting with people on Twitter, including people who had, like, not great things to say, and he was very nice about it.
Yeah, he was. He handled it with a great deal of grace.
Yeah. Yeah, and when Matt says not very nice things, he means downright mean.
Yeah, people were downright rude to him, and he was very nicely just saying, well, I'm sorry you feel that way. You know, he just literally like, hey, we tried. I'm sorry you feel that way. You know, and just that was mm-hmm. the end of it.
Yep.
So kudos to him for that.
Yep.
A little other piece of the Klingons that we learned that I wanted to touch on was who Kenneth Mitchell plays as Cole. We've heard the name, but we've never seen him before. And the cool thing that they got to reveal during their panel was what he looks like in his full Klingon makeup and costume.
Right. I almost forgot about that.
Uh-huh.
And he's different. Like, he's a little bit different than what we've seen, because he comes from a different house, which is what he was able to tell us was, hey, remember there's 24 Klingon houses. That was another thing that almost that both panels of the actors and the designers talked about was, we're going to try to show you different houses, and there's 24 of them, and not necessarily yet, like, not all of them are as fleshed out as, say, the important ones, but they all try to give houses a different style, you know, a different kind of leadership style. So Cole looks quite a bit different, actually. Not, you know, the basic makeup is of course the same, but he looks a bit different. His regalia is different. It's very much more, you know, leather and I don't know, whatever. There's leather and maybe some baldric kind of look to it. That's a little more Klingon, a little more like the Klingons we expect, you know.
Yes. Yeah. More traditional looking.
Yeah.
And yet, there's like a almost a dark Roman
yes.
sort of thing very going good. On there as well.
I couldn't place it. That when you say that, that's exactly it.
Yeah.
And so it's cool. It's nice to see something different because everyone saw the Tecumseh House stuff that was very ornate. You know, it had those like crystals on it, and everyone, ugh, really, you know,
right.
Why?
It is a bit gaudy. I'm gonna say right. Tecumseh is a bit gaudy.
Right, and so it's cool to see that Cole is kind of a stripped down, like, warrior kind of looking guy. Like, he doesn't have all this,
right?
You know, fancy this, flair.
And I imagine this, and I'm sort of connecting dots that maybe aren't there, but I do imagine that that's sort of part of Brian Fuller's vision is this idea that, you know, oh, we're going to be so diverse, right? We're going to have this diverse cast of characters on screen, but then that doesn't only happen in the humans. You know, it's like looking around. And what would it be like if you went to the Klingon homeworld and walked around? You wouldn't just see, like, everyone looks the same and wears the same clothes.
Yes,
they should
exactly.
be as diverse as the humans that are being portrayed.
And the designers touched on that, too. And they said, you know, the Klingon Empire is an empire, which means there's multiple, like, conquered worlds. There's, you know, all mm-hmm. kinds of stuff in the Empire that we don't really ever see, right? We can just sort of take it for granted. So they said that they were very kind of aware of that and thinking about that, like, yes, not all of them are going to look quite the same because they're not all the same. They're just not, you know, they're from sort of different ethnic groups or possibly totally different blends of a conquered race, you know, who knows? So it's cool. It's very cool that they thought of that.
And the little good.
Well, I was just gonna say before we stop talking about Cole, the other kind of cool thing is that they tie him back to a very famous TOS Klingon, which is that Cole is from the House of Kor.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is pretty cool. Of course, it made canon folks kind of heads explode just because these Klingons look so different, and it's like, how could he be from the House of Kor? He doesn't look anything like Kor, and it's like, okay, here we go again.
The houses are big, though.
Yeah, and it's new makeup. Come on, everyone, just go along. Like, it's fine.
But you have to expect those arguments to be made.
Oh, you did. So there you go.
I would be disappointed if they weren't being made.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And just because I love minutiae and pointless trivia, I'd like to just throw in the fact that Laurel was talking about, this is Mary Chifo, who plays the Klingon Laurel, and her character is from two houses, T'Kunva and House Mokai. And we couldn't remember exactly if we had heard House Mokai before, so Googled it, and of course found the Memory Alpha entry for House Mokai. And it seems that the only time this was ever mentioned in canon Star Trek was in Voyager's episode The Killing Game, Part 1, where we see, I believe it's Janeway as a Klingon, and this is the episode where they're trapped on the holodeck in the World War II scenario. And there's Janeway as a Klingon in a Klingon scenario in the holodeck, yelling something like, honor to House Mokai or something like, House Mokai will never yield, something like that. And so we didn't even know for sure if this was a real Klingon house. But now once it's on screen, it'll be canon. So House Mokai will officially be a real house.
Yeah.
There you go.
It's very cool. I assume we kind of assume that's Kirsten Byers doing, since she was a big Voyager expert.
Right.
Could very well be.
She had written a bunch of, she's famous for writing a bunch of Voyager novels. So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I think our fourth panel of the day was the book and comic panel, where we learned about how they were going to present, obviously, Discovery in a more multimedia format, and how they are planning to coordinate them.
Yes, which was key. So they're trying to do a coordinated, expanded universe kind of deal.
Right. There's not going to be an ongoing Discovery book right away. They're going to do smaller books, 3 or 4 issue limited series focusing on various aspects, be it a character or, I don't know, a particular storyline or whatever. And that's the plan from the beginning. And the novels are going to start coming out soon. David Mack's book will be the first one, and I think that comes out a day or two after Discovery premieres.
Yes, September 26th.
There you go. And all of this is going to be coordinated by Kirsten Baer, along with the Discovery writing staff. So they're going to try to give it an element of cohesion with the TV show as much as they can, because historically the novels and the comics have absolutely nothing to do with the movies and the TV shows. They're considered their own thing, and they're a lot of fun, but they're not considered part of the official canon. Technically, this new version is not going to be either, but they are going to try to make an effort to make it at least fit together at least somewhat.
Mm-hmm. Brian, I think it's worth sort of talking about, I know we had a discussion in Las Vegas about you were expressing some, can I say, frustration about how it seems like they're sort of talking out of both sides of their mouth in terms of how this tie-in is going to work.
Yeah. I mean, the initial plan, the initial thing we were told, granted, this was a while ago, this was back at Mission New York, the impression that we were given was that this was all going to tie together, and that you can consider what you saw in the comics and in the books kind of a canon thing. And I don't have the exact quotes in front of me, but Kirsten kind of intimated that as well the other day. So they want it fits in, but it doesn't really fit in, and it's canon, but it's not quite canon, and like there's like it didn't quite. I don't have the quotes in front of me right now, unfortunately, but if you read the quotes side by side, you can see how they kind of contradict one another, and you could be kind of confused by it.
Yes.
But I do think the bottom line, though, is do not treat anything on paper, basically, as canon. The old rule still stands. If it isn't on camera, it didn't happen.
Right.
And I happen to have this page open, so the article that we posted about that panel. So I have the quote here. And it was, Kirsten Baer saying, Because of the collaborative nature of this process, we're able to go further, take bigger risks. The danger is that in the future, someone will come up with an amazing story idea that would be incompatible with what we've already established, and just like always, the series is going to take priority. But the hope is that we can carve out these places that are safe, and that we can continue to protect, because as much as possible, we want this to be one integrated universe. We're doing what we can to make sure these stories all fit together moving forward. So, you know, it came across to me as we want it to be canon. We want it to fit in with the canon exactly. But the television, the series producers have said, you know, we're not going to be beholden to anything you write in the books. Because if that were the case and they had written something in the book and later they wanted to do a story that contradicts the books, the series, the TV series would be stuck. So it sounds like, you know, they've told the book writers, look, until we come up with a story idea that has to override what you've already put on paper in the books, then it'll be integrated seamlessly. But that will probably happen at some point.
Yeah. Right. So to me, that's contradictory.
Yeah, you now see why we're saying it's sort of hedging and it's sort of wishy-washy.
It's hedging. Yeah.
And again, that's okay when you figure like, all right, so it's the same rule as always, which is what's on the screen matters. The books you have to take with a grain of salt. Always. Like, okay, right. There you go.
They're just gonna try to take a little more care than they have in the past, right. Which is great.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. David Mack's book is coming, and then Dayton Ward has one coming out, I believe, in the spring.
Mm-hmm, yeah, and early 2018,
Yeah, and apparently that's going to take place, I think, 10 years before Discovery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
And 20 years before the, or 10, or was it, yeah, something
yeah,
like 10 that.
Yeah, 10 years before Discovery, yeah, so 20 before TOS.
20 before TOS, right. And Mack's book, apparently, is going to feature an appearance by the Enterprise.
Huh, yeah.
The Pike Enterprise, right, obviously. Right. But
unless there's time travel, maybe the Enterprise J.
It could be.
The one from the Zindi, like the future Zindi War kind of stuff. Oh, no.
Yeah.
You guys. Yeah. Does that mean Crewman Daniels is going to show up and talk about a temporal war?
Yeah. People, oh, no.
People's heads would explode.
I know, right? No, it's not supposed to have that. So that's the good news.
Yeah, so they're already dropping in kind of little TOS-ish kind of things into the books.
Well, and let's be real, it would be really hard to resist doing that.
Yeah, I was about to say the temptation would be overwhelming.
Because we know the Pike's Enterprise is out there right now, you know?
Yeah, so. Pike and Spock are out there.
Exactly.
So, yeah. So, how that will ever be handled on TV, who the hell knows?
Oh, yeah.
At least they can have fun with it in a book.
Yeah.
So, anyway, those were the highlights, basically, of those four panels. We're probably glossing over things here and there, but you get the gist of it. It was very informative. It was also very exhausting because that was the first day of the convention. It was a Wednesday.
Yeah.
Yep, they shoved it all in there.
And they were 4 hours in a row. No break, no nothing.
Nope.
One after the other, after the other, after the other, in the main ballroom.
Yeah. As soon as they could shuffle people off the stage, they shuffled people on stage. There was really no break.
It was kind of brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was.
Yeah.
And then granted, we had to be in there. But if you were a fan that, you know, wanted to know as much as you could about Discovery, you were being, you know, they were putting you on the gauntlet, basically. Yeah. Like you were.
And unfortunately, like by the end, the crowd really had thinned, and it was unfortunate.
Thinned. It was practically empty by the end.
And that's a bummer, just because there was, you know, useful stuff in all of them for people who were interested, say, in the novels or the comics. That was the last one of the day, and man, it's a slog, you know, to get there. It's like, okay, sorry.
You know, and I know, and Jordan was giving everybody a hard time about leaving for the final panel, and I was just like, dude, people have been in here for 3 hours. What do you expect?
Right.
Yeah. So that was not optimal, let's just say.
Yeah, but a lot of good information. I myself was pleased, obviously, that they were there. I do think it was odd to do it on a Wednesday, which is the least attended day of the convention.
Yeah.
Yeah, none of those panels were full.
Not even the first Discovery
panel.
And, of course, they should have been, because it's the new Trek show, right? I would expect it to be crazy full, but, of course, Wednesday.
But, you know? Yeah, the thing is, like, they didn't, you know, as this happens every year, this isn't new or unusual for any con, but they announced the schedule, what, about a week before the actual convention. And so everyone had already made their airline and hotel reservations. And I'm going to...
Long ago.
Yeah, months and months, if not a year ago. And so the majority of these people were probably saying, hey, I've got to work, or I've got commitments. You know, I'm not going to plan to spend all 5 days at the con anyway, so I'll just come on Thursday or Friday, because right. The big stuff usually happens on Friday and Saturday. Mm-hmm. So that I would have been pretty upset if I had booked my tickets to come later in the week, and then all the disco stuff happened on Wednesday.
Not even broken up. One long chunk.
Yeah. In 4 hours right back to back.
I mean,
I assume there's a very good reason why it was done that way.
Sure.
But it doesn't make it any easier, regardless of whether there was a very good rationale or not. That was tough.
And even the later in the week, I think it was Friday, was our TNG day, where there's a Next Generation special 30th anniversary event in the evening, which was a separate ticketed event, so you had to pay extra to go to that.
Right, which featured the entire cast, Denise Crosby and John DeLancey.
All on stage at once. But then throughout the day, they again did this 4 panels in a row. They had 3 panels with like duos of the main actors and then Patrick Stewart. And they were in the same time slots as the disco panel, so end of the day. And those were, I think, pretty full, because it was Friday at that point, and a lot of people were probably coming for TNG stuff. It's the most, you know, it's the most popular of all the series. But that was another bit of a slog, just like sitting for 4 hours in the main ballroom. It's like you don't even have time to get up and pee, because like you said, as soon as they leave the stage, when people leave the stage, the next group comes on immediately.
Yep, we all had to hand off something. Hey, can you take over this? I gotta run, you know.
I gotta go to the bathroom.
I just have to pee. Yeah. Like,
I mean, I guess it's entirely possible that all ended up happening because of the way. I assume that CBS and Creation could not coordinate how Discovery was going to happen until very late in the game.
Probably,
and
then
I think so.
That they had to reschedule, we had reshuffle a lot of things in order to get them to work. Because, to do that for 2 hours. To ask people to sit through that many hours, 2 out of 3 days, is kind of absurd.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, it was quite something. And our butts were sore, probably, I think, after that.
The TNG cast did not really break any kind of news. It's, you know, these things are typically more of a nostalgia tour than anything.
Yeah,
they were fun.
They were fun. Oh no, they're always fun.
Yeah,
the cast tries very hard, and they had a grand old time. But yeah, there's nothing to report in terms of like anything astonishing, new project that anybody's got going on. I mean, Jonathan Frakes would have been the one to talk to, and Jonathan unfortunately did not make it due to a series of missed flights, I believe.
Last minute delayed flights.
So he did not come at all. Otherwise, he might have been a good person to talk to about Discovery or even Orville.
Right.
Because he's worked on both now. So, yeah.
Right, since he's directing both.
Speaking of. I'm going to do a really clever segue here. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Speaking of Orville, who's created by Seth MacFarlane and shares a name with MacFarlane of MacFarlane Toys.
What did we learn?
Don't say.
I know it's not spelled the same, though. What did we learn, guys, about MacFarlane Toys? There's like a whole MacFarlane panel to share. But I think, Brian and Matt, you guys should maybe give our listeners a little bit of background on why we were excited for the MacFarlane panel to begin with.
Matt, you want to start or you want me to take it?
You can take it because you're really into it, and I'll sort of follow up. So,
all right. Well, for those who don't know about MacFarlane Toys, it's a toy company that is owned by Todd MacFarlane. And Todd is a rather legendary comic book artist. He made his career he became a star in the late 80s at Marvel Comics drawing Spider-Man. He basically, his influence is so pervasive on that character that to this day he's still drawn in some form the way Todd drew him. He had a tremendous influence on the character. So Todd was a huge star. He founded Image Comics along with a bunch of other artists in the early 90s, and then he decided to start this toy company.
Well, Todd's big claim to fame is he's the creator of Spawn, of course.
He's a creator of Spawn. Yeah. Like I said, he's a founder of Image Comics.
Yeah.
So that was his claim to fame. And then, like I said, he decided he didn't like the kind of toys he was seeing out in the marketplace. He thought they could be done much better, so he started his own company. And he's had various licenses for all sorts of things through the years. He never had Star Trek before. Todd gets a lot of quality for a relatively small price. Most of his stuff, I think the basic toys, are typically about $20.
Yep.
And they are very nicely detailed toys. These are not mold. These are not like cookie cutter molds that they push out. Like, these are really nicely done. They make an actual effort with their stuff. These are not Playmates toys.
No, they're not. That was one of the things that really impressed me about the panel, is the way he talked about, like, he himself was just talking about the toys, the quality, how it irked him that, you know, these other companies were churning stuff out for, as he was saying, like $5.99, and he goes, well, that's ridiculous. Like, you know, throw two more dollars into it and you can get a lot higher quality. And they went, it's not possible. No one's going to buy it for $2 more, right? Because we're selling them for $5. Why would somebody buy them for, you know, $7 or $8?
Right.
And I love that he was just like, oh yeah, whatever, the quality's there, people are going to buy them. And of course, he's right.
Yeah.
You know?
Todd was there to basically speak to the audience about how he's acquired the license. And McFarlane Toys has the license for the entire franchise with the exception of the Kelvin stuff. I have no idea why that is, but that's the deal. I don't know if there's a weird legal thing with Bad Robot or Paramount,
yeah,
or both or whatever, but that's their problem.
But it's very exciting that in theory and in potential, you know, in the future potential, that they have pretty much all the properties.
Everything that they, from the cage all the way to the, you know, end of Enterprise, like, you know, everything.
Yep.
The first two figures that will be premiering are going to be Captain Kirk and Captain Picard. Todd went through in detail about how they assemble these things. Now, typically, if it was an actor from a current series, they would sit them down at a scanner and scan their faces and build the mold out of the scan that they got. But because, obviously, these guys, we're seeing, you know, versions of them that are decades old.
Yeah.
Right.
50 and 30, basically.
I'm just listening to you piece your words together, Brian. I'm like, how is he going to say this delicately?
Yeah. I mean, there's no point in putting William Shatner or Patrick Stewart in front of a scanner at this point in their lives. So what Todd and his people had to do was go through a lot of meticulous searching of photographs and film frames from the shows from various angles and then try to build the scan that way. And Todd showed us the scans that they've come up with for both of them, and they were pretty damn impressive. And he also had prototypes of both of the figures at the convention. And they were also in San Diego, I believe.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, they were. I think we got pictures of the two new ones.
Yeah, they're really great. Look, they look fantastic.
Yeah, they look really good.
Yeah.
It's
so you're going to see that. They're going to be building bigger figures. They also announced they're going to be doing a whole line of Discovery stuff. And for that, they sat the actors down and scanned them. They scanned the uniforms. They scanned everything. The actors, the uniforms, the props, you name it, they scanned it.
Yep.
So some of that crazy detail you see on the Discovery uniforms, Todd claims they're going to capture that detail.
Yeah, as much as they can, he said.
Yeah, as much as they can.
Yeah.
Because there is a certain ridiculous amount of detail on those uniforms.
Yeah.
What else?
Well,
so the props he showed that they're doing... the hand phaser, they're doing, I think, a phaser rifle, right?
I don't know. The only thing they showed for sure was the hand phaser.
Yeah, which looked super cool.
Yeah. But we can assume they scanned all the props because he said they went to the set in Toronto and like laser scanned like everything or whatever. So that's
right,
amazing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So he's not just doing figures, he's gonna do the role play aspect of it as well.
Yeah.
So
I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, so at this time next year when you're in Vegas, a lot of people will be walking around with McFarlane Discovery phasers. You know what I mean? You'll see a lot of that going on.
It's
in my opinion,
it's so great.
I'm sorry.
Sorry. It's
no, go ahead.
It's so great that we're going to have what I might can I is it fair to say it's sort of a mid-range toy?
Yes.
Cuz
yes.
We have the Playmate stuff, which frankly looks like crap.
Yeah.
And yes, then we have the, you know, $500 meticulous replica that there's only ever 100
QMX
made,
stuff.
Or the QMX type stuff, that kind of level. So it's nice that the idea that you're going to be able to pay a reasonable amount of money, you know, what, less than $100, like $20, $30, these, $40.
Yeah, $40 for the phaser, they said.
$40 for a phaser? That's like nice enough to do a pretty good cosplay with. It doesn't feel like some piece of crap plastic mold toy. That's pretty awesome. That there's a space for that in Trek toys.
Oh, very much so.
Oh, no doubt.
I mean, that was sort of Diamond Select space, but they're a little slow to bring stuff out, let's be honest. So right. I'm kind of excited to see what McFarlane does, because he has a reputation for detail and detail at the price level, you know.
So. Yeah. I mean, these are the kinds of things, even if you're not into toys, because I'm not into toys, but like these are like figurines. You can display them as figurines. Like when those Kirk and Picard figures come out, I am buying them instantly.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
just displaying them. They're display pieces. Yeah, they're great.
It's incredibly impressive. They say that there's 16 points of articulation, which means like, and he said like specifically, these guys are made to sit in their captain's chairs if you so wanted to, you know, provide that background for them. But they don't come with that, just to be clear. But if you wanted to, you know, build or whatever, like they'll sit properly. They won't look weird because they have 16 points of articulation. They'll actually sit in a chair properly.
With their like legs sticking straight out or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So none of that. They'll actually sit. Yeah, they'll sit down and come out and bend at the knee and have a ball joint, you know, sort of at their ankle. And they'll sit properly instead of looking weird. And that was, you know, and he goes, I know that's important, you know, to you Trekkies and their command chairs, you know, or something like that. And it was true. Like, that's really true that we need, if you're going to pay, you know, if you want this kind of level of detail, you of course you want them to actually pose and sit and do everything you would expect them to do. So cool for them. Yeah. It's really cool.
Yeah, I am very excited about this. I think it's going to be, I think a lot of fans are going to be very, very happy with what Todd puts out.
So the other piece of news that came out of the con was two announcements from two Star Trek video games. So we had news from Star Trek Online that Jordy LaForge will make an appearance in the next installment of the game. And he will, of course, be voiced by LeVar Burton. So they're really excited that they got him to come and reprise his role as Jordy LaForge and voice a character in the game. They have a whole set of new storylines that you'll get to play in that. And then Star Trek Timelines have announced that they are going to be adding Discovery content to the game. We spoke to them a bit, and they told us that they're hoping to get it to the point where new players can come in and relatively quickly start playing through Discovery content, and that the content is going to be very heavily linked to what we see on the screen. So other than just the characters hanging around, they want those storylines to meld somewhat with what we're actually seeing happen on television.
Very, very cool.
So that's a couple of exciting new pieces of news in the Star Trek gaming world. I think, you know, all those things that we've talked about, I think, are the main bits of news. You know, we have the various details revealed about Discovery and the books and the comics, the characters, the designs. Got a chance to speak with a couple of the actors, the new video game stuff that's coming out, the toys, and just, yeah, a lot more details, particularly on the Discovery Klingons. But other than that, I mean, there's plenty of other stuff that happened at the con. I think those are just sort of the main newsy bits. So I kind of thinking ahead, you know, to next year, I'm trying to think, like, what were some of your highlights from this year? What are the things you'd like to see again? And maybe what are some lessons learned from this year?
What did I like about this year? I do like how creation continues to, like, add more flourishes to, like, the main ballroom. Like, they continue to, like, make it feel more and more Star Trek-y. They added, they built that that 10 forward set for photo ops, so they now have that along with, like, the bridge. And several other places where you can take some really, really cool photos. I mean, that's always fun. We didn't do the 10 forward thing, though. We'll have to do that at some point.
Well, was it possible to go in it?
No,
or did you have to pay for a photo op with a star?
Yeah, I think it was a photo op. They were holding it exclusively for, like, specific paid photo ops. So that was a bummer.
Like, paid for to get, like, your photo op with you know, one of the stars of the show, right?
Yeah, I think it was only for, like, TNG cast, like, photo ops, basically.
It's too bad because we went and we were able to see it and see the props they had on display, which were awesome, but we couldn't, it was roped off, so you couldn't actually go walk around the quote unquote little set facade thing they had set up, which I guess.
Because, I mean, the first thing you want to do is sit in one of those chairs at the bar, right?
Yeah, get behind it and pose or whatever. It was too bad that you couldn't do that, but like I said,
oh,
people
green.
Scuffing it up. Yeah, it is green.
It is green. Yeah. No, nope, couldn't do it. So that was kind of a bummer, but maybe they'll open it up to more photo ops, you know, like normal photo ops next year.
Right. And I do like how every year they have like some sort of like prop fashion show of some kind. Like this year obviously was Discovery, so we got to see a lot of the Discovery props. Which, by the way, the photographs that you see online do not do them justice.
Yeah, very impressive. This was the same basic exhibit that they had at Comic-Con, but transported over to Vegas. And so, of course, some of us weren't in Comic-Con. So, like, Brian and I weren't at Comic-Con, so we hadn't seen these yet. So we were, you know, just kind of mouth agape at all the detail that's in, especially the Klingon stuff.
Especially the Klingon stuff, yeah.
Just amazing.
It's like museum level.
Like, you definitely want to almost touch it. You have to not touch it, but you want to touch it.
Well, somebody thought I was going to touch it, even though I wasn't going to. And I got my wrist slapped.
Yeah, Brian got a little too close to that Klingon knife.
That dagger. The Doctog,
That tog, and they were like, no touching. We're like, no, we know. We just want to look at it. You know, it's like, it's amazing. So
there was a little bit of paranoia. Anyway, those things are cool when they do those every year. I love that they bring those things
in.
That
is cool.
There was a whole area for TNG as well that was in that in the same 10 forward section. They had a bunch of TNG props. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So those little things like that I really like a lot. So next year, I think, is what? It's going to be 5 days again, right?
Yeah, yes. Next year, they've already confirmed it's going to be 5 days. It's going to be held August 1st through the 5th, 2018. So make those reservations now, ladies and gentlemen. Actually, you know what? If you know you're going, actually do go ahead and book your room at the Rio, because they don't take the money out until, what, the day of or the day before or something like that?
Yeah.
And you have until something like 72 hours before to cancel, even if you book now. So.
Yeah, you have a 72-hour window. Yeah.
So it's probably worth doing that. Well, it's worth doing that as soon as the convention rates get posted. I should clarify, they might not be up yet, because you want to make sure that you don't just go to the regular Rio website to book that if you're going to do it. Go through Creation's website so you make sure you get the discounted rate that they have for convention guests.
Right. I think that might be in the new year, but I can't remember when they start posting that.
So next year is going to be fascinating, because we're going to, a new Star Trek series will have had its first full season on the air.
Yeah.
And we'll be in the hiatus between two seasons, and like there'll be a lot of speculation. There'll be, you know, reviews of everything that we've already seen. Like, it should, you know, provided that the show is good, it should be a very lively convention next year.
I'm hoping so, because I think all of us noticed, well, certainly, obviously, Brian and I, who have been there in the past years, noticed how chilled out the con was this year. The attendance was down significantly from last year.
Which is understandable to some degree, because last year was the 50th.
Right, the 50th anniversary was last year. I think what a lot of people did, they didn't come the year before the 50th. Although the attendance was still pretty high 2 years ago.
Yeah, but then, it was.
But then last year, I think people, you know, came and just did the whole 5 day thing. And they said that I'm going to save my money next year, because that last year was amazing, but it was also intense and just a huge energy blowout. And I think a lot of people burned themselves out or just said, you know, I don't want to spend the money again. And, you know, I thought that with Discovery coming out, attendance was going to be increased. But maybe the fact that it's not on the air yet, you know, people don't know these actors that are on screen, on stage.
I think that'll be the biggest difference next year, is we'll know these characters, you know, and these actors and these characters.
Right. So we'll want to go see them.
Right. Yeah. I think people want to see them.
But it was markedly down in attendance. Like, in all the years that I've gone now, this is like my fourth or fifth year, whatever it is, this was easily the most low attendance con I've been.
Same for me. And it was, you could notice it everywhere. On Wednesday and Thursday, it was just like really, really dead. But even just every night you going out to the bars, because that's what happens every night is, you know, and I think probably everyone's favorite part of the con is not necessarily the actual con. It's going and seeing your friends, seeing these people who you haven't seen and you only ever see them at the Las Vegas con, meeting new friends, you know, just talking truck with people, having a drink at the bar and in the Rio, and just everyone's there. So half the people are in costume and everyone's just having a good time, you know, and everyone, you're just surrounded by people who are instantly your friends because you all know you have something in common, and it's this passion for Star Trek. So it's like, there's such a great camaraderie. And I think, not that that was missing this year, certainly it wasn't, but It just wasn't as wild and crazy of a time as it sometimes gets with, you know, people out at the bar till 6 a.m. every night going crazy.
Yeah. And a lot of the regulars that would normally be there weren't there either.
Right. So hopefully, my hope for next year is that a lot of is that Discovery does well, a lot of people come back, and we have some great conversations. We can get together with our Trek brothers and sisters and just chat. What do we think is going to happen next season? Did you see the finale? It was nuts and all this stuff. You know, that's going to be fun because that's something we haven't had in over a decade.
Yep. It's going to be exciting for that. Another thing looking forward to next year, though, is next year is also the 25th anniversary of Deep Space Nine. And so the they were saying that they're hoping to get the entire cast back to Vegas. So that, let's hope that's true.
Including Avery.
Including Avery, which is just a big get because he doesn't really... He's not into it so much these days. so that would be really cool. I would be very excited for that, personally, because I like Deep Space Nine a lot. So.
Right, and I guess it's always possible that the documentary that they're doing will premiere at the con.
Ooh, that would be fun. That's a great idea.
That would be cool, because they didn't exactly say when. Their target is just 2018. So
yeah, based on the panel we went to on Sunday, it sounds like they still have a rather full plate.
Yeah, they're saying they have 100 hours of interviews to go through. So that's no small task.
It feels like they may still be finding a real a final shape for the documentary. So, yeah, it could very well be that we won't see that thing until next August.
Yeah, it would be very cool. Actually, very smart of them to make it the debut at STLV.
Yeah, it would be a lot of fun. So hopefully they'll do it. Because I think Adam and Gary are the creation guys. I think they're... might be part of the financing for
it. Creation did help finance the documentary.
Yeah, so it's possible that it will make its premiere then at Las Vegas.
That would be
year.
That's a great idea, Brian. I hope that happens.
Yeah.
You know what? Let's email Gary and give him our idea. I'm sure he hasn't thought of it. But anyway, we have a blast at this thing every year, and you end up missing everybody.
Yeah, for sure. Already back in the real world, and just not the same.
Yeah, nope. It was a really good experience for someone who had never been. It was really awesome, and like you were saying, it's just a very different. You know, it's a different world for 5 days or whatever. You get to just drop the outside world and just chill out and talk Trek and or whatever. Yeah. But just it's a very different vibe, and it's really nice. And because it's Vegas, there's just this whole party vibe, and there's you don't have to worry about the outside world. You just hang out and you do your thing.
Right.
Yeah, and because of the way that hotel is set up and the way the whole convention is set up, if you really want to, you'd never have to leave the hotel. Now, I personally don't recommend that.
Yeah.
But
you could kind of
live in this hermetically sealed existence for the entire time you're there. You can walk in one day and not walk out again until you leave 4 or 5 days later, because there's plenty of restaurants, there's plenty of this and that to do. So you can literally live in your little Star Trek world for 4 or 5
there's
days.
There's plenty of alcohol.
Yeah, they won't run out of booze, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Although I do think they watered down their vodka a little bit.
That's just Vegas, though, man. Before we go, though, I would like to share a Treknecdote in honor of Jared, who we dearly, dearly missed at this year's con.
Yes, we did.
I got a Treknecdote, and must admit, this is not from myself. It comes straight from Larry, Dr. Trek Nemechek, at the con, told Brian and I this story, and I will now share it with you guys. So what, and Matt, I don't know if you've heard this one, except for when I... was chatted to you about it later. I don't know if you heard Larry.
No, I was actually standing there with you guys.
Okay, I couldn't remember if you were actually heard him saying it or not. What is the connection between Schoolhouse Rock and Star Trek? It is the guy who sings the I'm Just a Bill and the Conjunction Junction songs. The name of that guy is Jack Sheldon. And in the Star Trek The Next Generation episode, the whatever it's called, the one with the binars, it's 100101.
Yeah.
Is that first season or second season?
Yeah, first season.
First season. The one with the binars.
One of the few first season episodes.
Yeah, it's a good one for sure.
That's not terrible. And that's when they introduce the holodeck, and they have a bar with a woman named Minuet in the bar, and there's a jazz band playing for a minute. And Jack Sheldon, who did these songs, is playing the piano in that episode.
There's a Star Trek Schoolhouse Rock connection.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah, that one goes pretty deep.
Yep. But what else would you expect from Dr. Trek himself?
That's right, and check him out on Portal 47.
That's right.
All right, guys. Well, that's pretty much it, I think, from STLV. This is the Shuttle Pod Podcast, just debriefing after a crazy weekend in Las Vegas. And if we didn't see you there this year, we hope to see you next year. It's going to be a great time.
Yep.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, guys.
Bye, guys.